Mute Magazine, number 24, May 2002, Knocking Holes in Fortress Europe. Just as resistance needs to be as global as capital, hacking the borders of Europe physically or politically needs to be as networked as surveillance regimes that protect them. Florian Schneider, a veteran anti-border activist himself, joins us today on Off the Hour to give us an overview of the multiple campaigns now underway in Europe. Florian, welcome to the program.
Hi.
You're planning a border camp in Strasbourg, France, and I wonder if you can tell us what the history of border camps are in Europe and what exactly happens. What's the model that folks are working on there?
Actually, the border camp in Strasbourg will be the, if I'm not wrong, I think it will be the 15th border camp we're doing since 1998. The idea came up when we started the campaign No One Is Illegal, which is an informal network of anti-racist and migrant supporters and migrant support group and migrant self-organizations, and we called for all kind of support for illegalized immigrants, that it be border crossings, bringing housing, jobs, education to the people. And in the process of organizing this network, the support network in all major cities all over Germany, we thought it might be also interesting to bring to go exactly in this area and to do our protest there, where the process of illegalization is happening, and this is along the border lines, especially along the outer borders of Europe or the so-called Schengen countries. So we decided to do a camping directly, I think it was 50 meters from the German-Polish borderline, and this borderline is since 12 years, a highly militarized border with police controlling every movement there. The border itself has shifted or moved into the area behind the borderline. So the police is not only controlling the line itself, but also a zone of 20 or 30 kilometers or miles within the country. They're controlling highways and railway stations. And all this constitutes a new sort of border regime. We thought we also have to develop new kinds of tactics to attack this border regime. So we decided to do a campsite there. It started with a techno rave, a huge concert with I think 3,000 or 4,000 people, and then approximately 500 of these the audience from the audience stayed for 1 week in this border area for the camping. We developed a wide range of actions from basic communication guerrilla to sit-ins. We opened new border crossings, uncontrolled border crossings across this river, which is actually the borderline in this area, and where a lot of people die every year trying to cross this border illegally. So we announced that on Tuesday we will open 3 new border crossings, and of course this turned out as a sort of permanent sort of game with the police on one hand. On the other hand, the idea of these border camps is to do all kinds of educational work with the local population. So we people there, or this is our analysis of the situation, is that the border itself is not working by this technological gadgets like the infrared cameras or whatever they, or the satellite systems and all these surveillance and control techniques, but it's working because of a political consensus which is happening, and where the local population is in a certain way involved in this border controlling regime as freelance policemen. So our idea was to attack this border regime means to create as much confusion as possible, but also to offer as much educational programs as possible.
And Florian, much of this information that you're describing is available on the web at No Borders website, which is noborder.org. But the other thing that's available on the site is historical information, because these actions have been happening since 1998.
Yeah.
And here in North America, since September 11th, there has been this raised level of awareness around immigration issues, particularly in the anti-immigrant backlash that we've seen to border or immigrant legislation being passed and borders being tightened, which has resulted in a sort of pileup of individuals at borders and families at borders who are seeking asylum or seeking work, who are not being allowed to come in while the goods and capital is still flowing.
Yeah.
What have the issues been like for the No Border campaign since September 11th in Europe, where these same kinds of laws are being passed?
This year's border camp will happen in Strasbourg. Strasbourg is something like the political...
Okay, we'll just have to call him right back and try to get that connection. We'll just go to a brief musical break and come right back to you. Welcome back to Off the Hour. Florian is back on the phone, and the discussion for the night is on immigration policy in North America and in Europe. Since September the 11th, the borders have gotten tighter and tighter, resulting in a pileup of not goods, not capital, but individuals and families. And we just heard from Jean Davison with the Montreal Gazette about Le Col border crossing, where on an average day they get 12 to 15 individuals coming through that border, filling out refugee claimant forms. And lately, the border crossing in Le Col has seen over 100 individuals filing claims each day. Welcome back, Florent. We've got the good connection back again.
Actually, it sounds much better now. Yeah.
Okay, maybe we're on a better connection.
Yeah.
Just to reiterate the question that I asked you before we got disconnected, since September 11th, immigration policy in North America, but also in Europe, has gone through a kind of transition, and some critics have called that transition anti-immigrant. Some people have called it xenophobic, and Amnesty International, in response to the Third Safe Country Agreement between Canada and the United States, has called it downright illegal. The No Border campaign has been acting on around border issues since 1998. What shape have the issues taken now in the post-September 11th world for the border campaigns in Europe?
First of all, for us or in Europe, really the break was happening in the beginning of the 90s, when this new European border regime around the Schengen countries, this kernel of EU countries, was established there. This was really the break. For example, at the border between Morocco and Spain, Moroccans could pass this border with just showing their passport. since 94, they actually don't have any chance to cross this border, so they have to do it illegally. I think technically September 11 didn't change so much in this situation, because the big change is happening 5 or 6 years or maybe 8 years before. On the other hand, politically, the climate has definitely changed here in Europe. What we are doing with this border camp in Strasbourg this summer, from July 19th to 28th, we go to the capital of Europe, the political capital of Europe, which is symbolizing the European unity and all this stuff. But we don't go there because of blaming the symbols of Europe for the racism and xenophobia. There's the reason to go to Strasbourg is that Strasbourg hosts one of the biggest databases all over the world, where all personal data of illegal migrants, illegalized persons, people who don't have permission to stay anymore, where all these data are hosted. And we think that this is constituting something like a postmodern or immaterial border, because in a situation where face checks, racist profiling is something like a matter of course in this political climate after September 11, the shortcutting the controls with these huge databases reveals a level of control and surveillance and establishing borders within inner cities and all over the country that you cannot compare with what has been the situation before.
Well, with a few years of doing this kind of action under your belt, of applying this model of camping out at the borders and raising the issues locally, what is the response of the government then, or the officials, or the media to this kind of direct action?
Yeah, it's very interesting because these border camps, they really have a very, very local impact. When we started at the German-Polish borderline, we attracted an incredible attention locally or regionally with the third border camp in the year 2000. For the first time, we were able to gain media attention, which was actually something like nationwide. So there were TV stations from all over Germany, and they reported about these actions, which had a lot of, which was very much connected to the political situation in that summer 2000, when a lot of fascist and racist attacks against migrants happened, and the government tried to develop rhetoric strategies against this fascist attack. So there was media attention on a much broader level started. It gained momentum also last summer when we were already 2,000 people at the border camp in the shadow of the international airport, because we said the airport in Frankfurt, this airport where day by day, 10,000-20,000 people pass, and where a lot of people are being refused at the gates of the terminals, and they were arrested without having committed any crime in detention centers, just because they're crossing the border so-called illegally. In Frankfurt, we got, Europe-wide attention. It was 1 week after the protests in Genova. We were around 2,000 people actually blocking the Frankfurt airport for something like 7 days, and we did a lot of creative and many different, as funny as politically challenging actions there. So the idea was getting more and more popular also in other European countries. There are border camps at the Spanish-Moroccan border, at the Croatian-Slovenian border. Right now, at the moment, the border camp at the Polish-Belorussian border is starting. So it is something like a Europe. It, it, became something like a Europe-wide movement. Last spring, there was a no-border camp in Woomera in the desert in Australia, and also since 2 years, there's a border camp in Tijuana at the U.S.-Mexican border, organized by local people. And this is the very interesting thing, that all these border camps are absolutely different. They are organized in very specific situations with precise tactical, strategical output. Yeah, but somehow all these actions and activities are connected or interconnected with each other, and this means that we can exchange experiences in practical things and how to organize such a big event, yeah, on one hand, how to deal with the media, but also how to estimate our own forces in a right or correct way, or and how to deal with the police and or the media. We expect that this summer in Strasbourg, we expect a tremendous increase of media attention, because it's somehow the only bigger event of this this new movement of movements, or what was formerly known as anti-globalization movement, but which may turn out as the real globalization movement. We from the No Border Network, we always said that we are not against globalization. We are absolutely in favor of a globalization from below, a globalization which is carried out by the people crossing borders day by day.
Florian, I want to thank you for joining us on this edition of Off the Hour. And as we close out, maybe you can go over some of the demands of the No Border campaign. What are the things that the folks who have been camping out on these borders, what do they seek to achieve?
It's very easy. There's only one basic demand, and this is called freedom of movement. So what we demand is that everyone, no matter where he or she is born, or what is the history, or what are the reasons why the people move from this place to another place, that all people have the right to decide by themselves or for themselves where they want to live and how. And I think this is a basic human right, and it reveals a lot that this human right is being refused in these times, which are ironically called known as the times of globalization.
Thank you very much, Florent. For more information on No Borders campaigns, take a look at noborder.org.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Terrorism is a technique. It is not an ideology. It is a strategy. And you cannot make war on a technique or a strategy.
Terrorism, Law, and Democracy, a documentary series examining the consequences of September 11th on Canada's legal and political system.
Canada's real threat came from the outraged reaction of an injured superpower. Canada's economic welfare depended on proving our loyalty with words, warships, aircraft, and combat troops.
Tune in Wednesdays 5 to 6 p.m. on CKUT 90.3 FM for Democracy in the Balance, a new episode of Long-Term Memory Radio.